You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is A Matter of Honor. I'm Mark from Andover.
I'm Jamie from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska, and we do have another guest on tonight. Love it when we have guests. Mark, you are... Now, are you one of the originating founders of Trekmate?
Not exactly, no. So, Paul and Wayne founded Trekmate back in... Let's think. November 2011, I think it was. And I joined... I came on as a guest around about episode 4 or 5. And I came on as a guest and then never left. So, yeah, I've been with Trekmate pretty much since the beginning. But I wasn't an original founder. but yeah, I've been around for a long time.
Then that ruins my ability to call. I was going to start calling you founder from now on, so I'll save that for Paul.
I'm more of a vorta than a founder. I'm the guy who makes things happen.
The vorta. That is funny. Okay, so if you decide that we're no longer worthy, you're going to send the gem Hadar to kill us, or...?
Exactly. If I don't get on for the episodes that I want to get on for, then yeah, I'll cut the show.
Well, and if Paul's the founder and you're the Vorta, who are the gem Hadar? Never mind. Well, then, why don't you tell us what you do on Trekmate?
Oh, on Trekmate. So I was a host on the Trekmate show, which is... taking a little bit of a hiatus. We do something every now and then, so currently Matt Warwick and I are the hosts on that show, and we do have something that we've got lined up with Larry Nemechek coming up very soon. And I'm also the host of Two to Beam Up, which is a Star Trek original series episode review podcast, which I do with my wife Kirsty. Now, we have been on a little bit of a break, but we are coming back. I've been rather busy over the last couple of months because I needed to find a new job. But now that's done, we are going to be coming back. And we're currently almost at the very end of Season 1. So we're just about to review City on the Edge of Forever. And then we're going to head on into Season 2. I've been a Star Trek fan for... Let me think. I first saw Star Trek when I was around about 7 or 8 years old, I would say, when the original series was on BBC Two here in the UK. And September 1990, so I'll take you back almost 25 years. Next Generation started here, and I fell in love. And that was my first real Star Trek love, and I've seen every episode and every movie since. And that's where it all started for me.
Then I'm surprised you didn't start a TNG podcast before I did.
Well, it's one of those things I would have considered doing, but there's only so much time in the day, isn't there?
Yes, I can understand that.
But I love TNG. It's I often think, is it my favourite series? Now, I would say that DS9 is probably the best series in terms of how it's written and in terms of the story arc, but. Is TNG my favourite? It's probably still my favourite because I just fell in love with Star Trek watching TNG, so I do definitely have a soft spot for Next Generation.
Okay. Well, as you know, we are considering going on to DS9, and I'm hoping by the time that the TNG run is done, that the Wilderness will also be, if not done, very close to being done, because I would hate to have two DS9 podcasts running at the same time. It would make no sense. It's just, I'm just rehashing the wilderness. What would be the point of that?
Yeah.
But yeah, that is what we do want to do. And so that's the reason why I bring that up is, so do you think when you're done with TOS, are you considering doing a TNG one yourself?
I don't know. It depends what Kirsty wants to do. She might, I mean, she does like Star Trek. She's not a diehard fan. I think she likes it more than she's probably willing to admit.
Okay.
When we finish TOS, would she go on and do something else? Uh-huh. Maybe. I mean, she does like Next Generation, so maybe we'll do that as well. Maybe we'll put our own little spin on that. That would be fun.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, because I'm sure, you know, we'll probably do things different than the wilderness. And if we even decide to go on to Voyager, I'm sure we'll probably not very much, because quite frankly, I built the show based on the Delta Quadrant and the Gamma Quadrant, so it'd probably be almost the same thing, really. But we'll run that bridge in 5-6 years.
Yeah, it's always good to put your own spin on things, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's kind of cool. All right, well then, why don't you go ahead and go on into the synopsis.
Okay, here we go. So the synopsis for tonight's show is Riker serves as an exchange officer on a Klingon warship. This is the 8th episode of Season 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is February 6, 1989. Written by Wanda Haidt, Gregory Amos, and Burton Armas.
Armas.
And directed by Rob Bowman. I saw the Armas thing and wondered about that as well.
I am Armas.
Guest stars include special appearance by Diana Muldaur as Dr. Pulaski, John Putsch as Mendon, Christopher Collins as Cargon, Brian Thompson as Clagg, and it co-stars Col Meany as Chief O'Brien. Yes, he does have his name, and I did listen to your last podcast. We finally have a name for Chief O'Brien. And we have Peter Parros as the Tactics Officer, and Laura Drake as Vecma. So, what did we think about this episode? I think this is a great episode. This is one of the standouts for Season 2 for me. It's a great Riker episode. I'm one of those people who, some people love Klingons, some people don't like them. I'm a little bit middle of the road when it comes to Klingons. I think when they're done really well, I think they're amazing. When they're not done very well, I don't like them very much. But I think this is a definite standout Klingon episode for me. So what about you, James and Lou? What do you think?
Okay, I mean, let me jump in first, maybe. Now, I'm not that big a fan of Klingons. Or maybe, you know, I don't consider myself to be a big fan of the Klingon shows. But this is, you know, very, very well put together in my mind. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was it was a great, really, really competent episode. It's not necessarily one of my favorites, but I really would struggle to find a list of, or at least a long list of things that I, you know, did not like. So I thought this was, you know, overall this was great.
Okay. Me? I guess I'm probably in the middle of the road again, leaning more towards Mark. I really dig the Klingon episodes when they're honorable, like this one is today. But unfortunately, as we go on throughout the series, the Klingons become less and less honorable as they appear. So because of that, I do like this Klingon episode probably more than I might like others. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we'll see how we go. That's just a brief synopsis. Okay, before we do, we have some forum feedback. Today, for a matter of honor, we left off on number 4 of Season 2. The outrageous Okona. I don't even know if I want to do the forum feedback for it. And it's
I have a comment on this as well.
Yeah.
So maybe I should read my own comment.
Yeah, okay. You can read your own comment, absolutely. So we start with Maress. And when I say I don't even know if I want to read this, guys, this doesn't mean I didn't want to read what you wrote. It goes to the back of the Okona. Crap episode. Let's see, what did I give that?
Actually, can I just admit something now? Because, I mean, when we did Outrageous Arcona, what, 3-4 weeks ago, something like that, I'm thinking back in my memory, I'm thinking, it wasn't that bad, was it? I remember completely destroying the episode as we were recording.
Oh, Jane, awful.
You gave it a one!
But my memory is really, really bad. I start thinking, you know, as soon as I'm out of the episode, I start having a nice feelings again towards it. And I read Kieran McDuff's post a little bit earlier on, and you know, he was standing up for the episode, and I'm thinking, well, maybe it's not too bad. Bad thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I gave it a 1.5. You gave it a 1, and Paul gave it a 1 as well. Paul Finch, that is. So, I mean, if you want to revise what you gave it, you can always do that.
No, just don't trust me. Just don't trust me in this far away from an episode.
Well, you still have 21 episodes to make a different selection, or about 20 episodes or so to make a different number. But anyway, Mares says, short and sweet, I agree with you guys. This is among the very worst TNG episodes. It is one of the few that I skip in rewatches. As always, though, your show was very fun. It was great to hear Paul Finch on as well. If I remember correctly, the actor who played O'Connor had been shortlisted for the role of Riker during the casting of TNG.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't imagine that. Yeah, she says...
I think he would have done okay.
Oh,
I think
no.
He's an actor. I think he was fine. I could see him in the sort of heroic, manly role that Jonathan Frakes took. I could see that. I don't have a problem with the actor. I just have a problem with the episode itself. I think he would have done okay. He wouldn't have been a bad choice for Riker.
I don't know. I guess, you know, looking back at 7 years of Trek, who could have done Riker better than Frakes? I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, yeah, we all love Frakes. And I was really sorry that we didn't get to see him at Star Trek London because he cancelled. But...
ooh, that sucks.
But the thing is, in a few weeks, I'm going to be in Seattle. I'm flying out to Seattle in early December for work. And there is actually a Star Trek convention in Seattle the weekend that I'm there, and Jonathan Frakes is going to be there. So I am seriously considering going along. So I'm flying all the way to the Pacific Northwest and considering going to a Star Trek convention.
The way you need to say to him is, since you weren't willing to come to me in England, I came here for you.
Yeah.
There you go. That'll work. Okay. Well, anyway, she also adds that she'd rate this episode a 1 and... but your podcast is a 5. Our podcast is a 5?
Definitely.
She's too kind. I don't know. At the end, you know, I think at the end of our run, that's one of the things we're going to have to do, James. Rate our own podcast on a series of 1 to 5.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
We'll give ourselves...
the podcast always gets a 5.
Yeah, our final thoughts and ratings on our podcast. Well, that was pretty good, James. You suck, but it's okay. We... yeah, right. Okay. Kieran. Oh, I'm glad you get to read Kieran's, because my throat can't handle it. I'm still suffering bronchitis. I don't know why it won't leave me.
Okie dokie. So Kieran McDuff, avid poster, follows up with, hurrah, finally a Battle Bridge feedback post where I'm not just going to agree with everything that was said. I know I'll be in a minority on this, but I actually don't mind this episode. Of the two plots, I definitely prefer the O'Connor plot to the Data plot. I think you're spot on in suggesting he's a poor Han Solo, but that's a pretty big character to be living up to. I think O'Connor's actually quite a likeable character, and possibly misunderstood. Yes, he does put it about a bit, shall we say, and he certainly milks the opportunity of being aboard the Enterprise. Maybe there's slim pickings in his area of space. Four women in quick succession? I'm not too sure that's a bad reflection of his character, or if it's a bad reflection of the desperation of the Enterprise crew members.
Sorry, go on.
Mind you, this whole story could have been a lot different had O'Brien been on duty when O'Connor had been aboard. I wonder if Myers would have been making eyes at him. I doubt he would have seen him as desperate anyway.
Would have been better than Keiko. I'm sorry, go on.
Yes, that's... continuing. Yes, that's my second attempt at a desperate housewife's joke. By the way, I completely missed the first. I don't know if anyone... when that came in. Clearly, I need to go and visit the holodeck and learn what funny is. We'll get back to that in a minute.
the Desperate Housewife? You got it, Mark? Because I don't.
Terry Hatchett was in. She was in Desperate Housewives.
Oh, yes, yeah, she was. She the was. Joke. Yeah.
Got it.
It should probably be noted that O'Connor is effectively getting some R&R in this episode while the engineers fix his ship. He's having fun on the Enterprise because he can. Of course, it all feeds in nicely to the rest of the episode and makes us doubt his integrity, but the later revelations of the episode reveal him to be a decent guy after all, and possibly a big softy at heart. We find out that not only did he do nothing wrong, but he helped a secret relationship. Yes, it's quite the Romeo and Juliet story, but it's done in a reasonable enough way. I even think that the Enterprise crew's reaction to O'Connor is reasonable enough. You could consider the women to be a bit desperate, as I did earlier, but then again, how often would we hear stories of women who love a scruffy-looking nerf herder? If he's given off that bad boy persona, maybe that's attractive to some of them. There are over 1,000 people on board the Enterprise. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that 4 of them are into that kind of man. Even the male crew members were taken by him. When you've got that reasonably regimented life in Starfleet, the carefree career choice of O'Connor might be attractive. I think this would be especially true for Wesley, who is still at the beginning of his career and has known very little else in life other than Starfleet. Ultimately, it becomes the classic story of men who want to be him and women who want to be with him. I'm not convinced by that. I think we made clear in the episode that I wasn't convinced by that. Anyway, I continue. I'm happy to defend the O'Connor storyline. It works for me, and although I admit it's rather cheesy at times, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to accept most of that cheese. I like a bit of cheese anyway. Where the cheese does go too far is with the Data storyline. I think I'd enjoy this episode a lot more had it been Pulaski teasing him about not being able to understand funny, rather than Guinan trying to calmly explain it to him. As much as I like what Guinan does most of the time, I don't think it works in this case. Nothing she says is wrong, but I think she tries to help too much. Pulaski would have made it more of a challenge than a help. Lou, any comments on bringing Pulaski in? Because I thought that the Guinan interactions were the only redeeming part of the episode.
Yeah, I don't think Pulaski would have worked, just because of the way she treats Data to begin with. Guinan was really trying to help. Pulaski, I don't know. It'd have been more condescension, and I don't think it would have worked for me.
Okay, and having said that, she's not the worst aspect of the Data storyline. I can't say I know much about the comic in real life, but he just wasn't funny in this episode whatsoever. He does a very good Jerry Lewis impression, but I never found him funny either. So as far as I was concerned, Data never stood a chance. Mind you...
Sorry. A very good Jerry Lewis? No, he don't. I don't. Because, you know, I did kind of find Jerry Lewis funny. There were a lot of funny things that Jerry Lewis did.
When you were a kid?
When I was a kid, yes.
No, yeah, I found Jerry Lewis funny when I was about 10.
Yeah. But I thought his impersonation of Jerry Lewis was just a wee bit over the top.
Yeah.
Go on. Sorry.
Mind you, Data never stood a chance anyway. The whole point of the plot is that you can't really teach someone to be funny. We get to that in this episode eventually, but the route we take is a very tough one. I think the best thing I can say about this plot is to praise Brent Spiner. He's a funny guy in real life, so it must have been really hard to purposely act like he's not. Maybe that's why they paired him with such an unfunny comic. I hope it's clear that I enjoyed this episode more than most people, but I can see why so many people don't. It's definitely high on the cheese factor, but I think it's harmless cheese as opposed to stereotyping cheese. Instead of the stereotyping cheese factor we'll get from Up the Long Ladder later in the season. I can't claim this episode to be a classic, but I'd rank it among. I can't rank it among the poorest of Trek either. It's a bit funny, a few good lessons and morals to take at the end, and no harm done. As such, I'll give it a middle-of-the-road 3 out of 5. A quick side note about the feedback section this week. It's funny, hearing back in my Trek movie ordering, I actually tweeted at that weekend that Search for Spock was my favourite odd-numbered movie, despite my putting the motion picture ahead of it. It just goes to show you that these things change all of the time.
I actually don't think Up the Long Ladder is that bad. Yes, it's racist and it's a bit cheesy, but I think it's far better than The Outrageous Okona.
Up the Long Ladder has that separate storyline, right, with the other crew members that have to, you know, come back because they're losing their genetic pool and they need to go and start breeding with the Irish.
Isn't yes, they have the case? They have the clones to bring Lloydie with the Irish people. Yes, they bring Lloydie and the can't remember what the other people are called. Yeah, they have that base of clones who have this advanced civilization. They have to breed with the Irish people. I actually have a little bit of a soft spot for that episode. I think it's okay. It's not awful.
No, I think that aspect of the episode, it, to me, is quite interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, me too.
I think the real bad thing with the episode is the, I mean, they lay the Irish stereotypes on very, very thick.
Extremely thick, isn't it? Yes.
Okay, wait a second, boys. Do we not know anybody from Ireland? Any listeners or anybody from Ireland? We have Data Logan coming on for that episode, but just because you guys are talking about the Irish stereotypes, I sure would like to bring somebody who is Irish and get their opinion on.
I don't know if you have any natively Irish listeners. There's Mick Ferris, who's from, well, he's from Omaha. But he lives in Ireland and has lived in Ireland for a number of years, and his wife is Irish, but he isn't actually natively Irish. I don't know if we actually have any Irish listeners.
If we have some Irish listeners, I would like to know what your opinion of Up the Long Ladder is. If you'd be interested in coming on, that it's the 18th episode. We'll be recording right now, slated for January 17th. So think about that and let me know if somebody's interested in joining Data Logan. I don't normally put two guests on, but for something like that, I might, because I'd like to know what they think about it. Because to me, I thought it was kind of funny. I thought it was just hilarious.
Something. I think it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, like Picard said, sometimes you just have to bow down to the absurd. But yes. Anyway, that's a different story.
So, Mark, do you want to, you know, as you're here, you can read out your comment.
Yes, I shall read my comment. And I said, great podcast, gentlemen. Absolutely bloody awful episode, though. As some may remember, this made my Shipwreck Trek last year cringeworthy in the extreme. Mm-hmm. I'd have to score this a 0.5. I could never bring myself to give any Trek a 0. So that's probably my lowest score. That's equivalent on my scale to a 1 out of 10. I really do not like this episode. I think Okona as a character, I just didn't like him. I just wanted to smack him in the face. I think the actor was good enough. And I think he would actually have made a reasonable Riker, but the whole Data, the comedy thing, it just makes me cringe every time I watch it. But awful episode, but I did really, really enjoy your guys' podcast. It was really, really good.
Didn't I say something like, he really doesn't remind me of Han Solo, but more like a Lone Star?
Yeah, he's not like Han Solo, because Han Solo's too cool for that.
Yes, it'd be more like a Lone Star.
Yeah,
from Spaceballs. Cool. So yeah,
yes, I love Spaceballs.
Maybe even Barf too.
Barf. Yeah, I haven't seen Spaceballs for years. Huh. I must watch that again. It's great.
Okay, you know, I think one of these days, Doc, you and I ought to just do a review of Spaceballs. Just pop it in where someone's expecting a Star Trek episode, and then say, "Ah, oh, just kidding." Look for the one that came out also. Anyway,
I mean, do you know what? I don't think I've seen Spaceballs. I think I've probably seen. Might have seen it once. I have no recollection of it.
Holy, wow.
Although I'm aware of the cultural kind of, you know, the bits of...
It's time for Amazing Speed and Ludicrous Speed.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Right.
It's awesome.
Ludicrous Speed. Okay. I can't stop. I'll have to slow down first. Anyway. Medic ends this one with, I can't agree more with all your thoughts on this episode. This is a one... For sure. I couldn't stand the comic. And the fact that he was an SNL alumni really didn't really do anything for me either. The Okona storyline is silly and portrays some Starfleet's finest in a poor light. I hate when they do this, and it occurs far too often. Ooh, I pronounced the T in often. I don't think Sheldon Cooper would like that or something. There aren't too many Trek episodes I'd skip during a rewatch, but this one tests my resolve. Unfortunately, this episode is real, but not spectacular. Yeah, I think, Sheldon Cooper hates it when you pronounce the T in often. Often. I don't know.
Why?
I don't, well, it's just one of his...
Well, there's a T in there, often.
Yeah, they were...
You can't pronounce that word without pronouncing the T.
Often. No. Yeah, that's true. But they were having a discussion about why Sheldon was all upset, and they were quizzing Leonard about what did he do. Did he whistle? Did he pronounce a T in often? And so, yeah, I don't know.
I guess Sheldon's from Texas, isn't he?
Yes.
Would you pronounce the T in often, Lou?
I just did. Often. Yeah, it's often. Often for me.
Yeah, often.
I don't know how else you would do often. It.
Good old often wrong soon.
Yes, but that sounds like often wrong soon, not often wrong soon.
Yeah.
I know. It sounds like Laura says often.
But isn't Brent Spiner from Texas? I think he is.
Is he? I don't know.
Yeah, Brent Spiner's from Texas.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah, it was a piece of trivia that both Brent Spiner and Michael Dorn are Texans.
Yes.
Okay.
And apparently that was a question once that I remember the answer to.
And one thing I do want to bring up about Kieran McDuff's message or his forum post, I didn't know what a Nerf herder was, so I looked it up.
Oh, you're joking.
You don't know what a Nerf herder
is? Oh, come on.
Scruffy-looking Nerf herder. Come on.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it.
You call yourself a nerd.
UrbanDictionary.com says Nerf herder is a redneck of the Star Wars universe, and that's probably why. Often known as a farm boy, he is skilled in many rustic activities and knowledgeable in the ways of farm work. I don't see how that matters, but a redneck in the Star Wars universe. Quite honestly, I never really got into Star Wars. So maybe what? I don't know.
Hang on, so Luke, I know. Have you not seen Empire Strikes Back?
I have many years ago.
Oh, Lou, come on.
Oh, I don't know why. I don't get into sci-fi. I really don't like sci-fi all that much, except for Star Trek and Spaceballs, Galaxy Quest, things of that nature. But Star Wars, I just never really got into Star Wars. My wife dragged me for Star Wars 3, and I can't think of the name of it.
You mean Return of the Jedi or
Return of the Jedi? That's six technically. Well,
no, it's not. It's three.
Well, yeah.
So, Lou, do you mean the original trilogy or the prequels?
The prequels.
Okay, well, that's fine. Okay, there's no problem there. I mean, actually, on a completely unrelated note, it is my son's birthday on the 11th. We had the party actually earlier today, but it's his birthday very soon, and we were out getting various presents, I suppose. And my other son was with me, and unfortunately, what I've been trying to do, the kids, they know of Star Wars, but they do not know of the prequels yet.
Ah.
They do not know of this. This has been removed. Any reference to it is kept out of sight. They watch the main films, and actually they also watched the Clone Wars, the cartoon series, which is actually a pretty decent decent cartoon show. That's fine. Unfortunately, I was in HMV, which is one of our local video store people, and my other son ran to me claiming that he had discovered new Star Wars films, and these episodes 1 through 3 were available for purchase. And we now, unfortunately, have copies of episodes 1 through 3 in the house. And I don't know how it's going to play out, but I really think that your innocence on this should not be broken at 8. I don't think it should be broken at 8. And I don't know how I'm going to play this.
The kids will like the prequel. The kids will like them.
We'll see. We'll see. But I might actually just make them disappear, by the way.
Have you seen them? No, I have no idea where they are. Okay, then. That was our forum feedback. So let's go into a matter of honor. And I'm going to start with my captain's log. This time it's a captain's unwritten log. It says, Captain's unwritten log. I'm spending my day at the phaser range with Ensign Tommy. So far, I've been able to slaughter him in every competition. So when we arrive at Starbase 179 and have welcomed aboard our replacement personnel as well as one Benzite exchange officer, I plan to summon Number One to a friendly game of shoot 'em up while I schmooze him into being the first Federation Exchange officer lab rat to serve aboard a Klingon vessel. Now, do you think that's how that log should have went, or can you do any better?
I think that's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, it'll work for me, James.
Absolutely fine.
Okay.
Although I have big problems with the phaser range. I really do.
Mm-hmm. So do I. Riker, Worf, and Wesley. Wesley. Why? Okay, I understand why they would bring Wesley. Proceed to the transporter room to welcome them aboard the new personnel and the one Benzite. The Benzite, who looks exactly like Mordok, a gentleman Wesley met while undergoing Starfleet Academy testing, is actually named Mendon. And Mendon is very eager to please, but is very eager to also rewrite the ship's manual for just about every procedure. What do you think about his immediate... What did he say? You know, I asked for this. This is not by chance.
Yeah. I mean, does anyone think that Wesley's being a little bit racist here?
Oh, that's my next point.
Is it just me? Is it just me? It's like, oh, you insights, you all look the same.
Yeah.
Oh, we are from the same structure. Naturally, we look alike.
Yeah. How do you tell each other apart?
What a geostructure is. That sounds like a cave, do you think, James? Geostructure. Geo meaning, obviously, of the earth or rocks. Or do you think the Benzites live in caves and... If anyone's from the same geostructure, they're sort of in it.
I don't know. I mean, they look like... I mean, they always come across to me as being like half a cross between a person and a fish. So I don't know if... I don't know if it's like an underwater cave or something. These guys are weird in my mind.
Yeah, but I do quite like the Benzites, though, because it's just a little bit interesting and a little bit different that they have to have that little gas... thing that they breathe from. I quite like that. That's quite a nice little feature.
Well, I could tell you one thing. At one point, I did drive a Geo Metro, and it had a pretty flimsy structure, so my Geo structure wasn't the very best. I'm just glad I didn't die in that little tin can. But yeah, I have the same thing on my notes that, you know, Wesley, during the transport of these officers, he has this silly-looking grin on his face, and when he screams, Mordok, what are you doing here? You couldn't have graduated from the academy so soon. You know, actually, I fell for this because when I was doing the Lutrek show at one time, I had actually asked the question, how could Mendon have actually graduated the academy and become an ensign so soon? And I didn't think exchange officer. He's obviously an officer on the Benzite. I don't know. Whatever. And that's the reason
that's,
why.
That's one of the things I have an issue with a little later on, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
I think you and I have the same issue. I think we probably have the same issue. So, yeah, we'll get there. So, Mendon actually is played by John... What was his name? Putch. And he actually did play the first Benzite, Mordok. So, it was really interesting that he got to play... both characters of the same species. That's nice. But he also plays the cameraman with the light in your face in Generations, if you remember him.
Oh, okay.
So when,
well, that's interesting.
Yes, when Kirk comes on the Enterprise B.
Right, yeah.
And the guy's shining his light in his face, and that's the actor who played Mordok and Mendon.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Okay, so, James, this one's for you. Number 5 says, what do we think about the phaser range? Why don't you tell me what you think about it first?
Okay, I have numerous problems with the phaser range. one is that why is there a need for a phaser range? You can just have it all in a holodeck.
Well, so that's what I thought.
That's the first one. But then you could say that, well, maybe... You know, maybe they do need a range because the holodeck doesn't give you perfect reproduction of everything. So, you know, maybe it's early holodeck technology that doesn't allow you to have it in the holodeck, whatever. The next one, though, is that, first of all, whenever you see people out on away missions and firing phasers, you're never given the indication that these guys are skilled at using phasers or have ever been anywhere near a phaser range. So if you do have a phaser range, then there are many ensigns that really should be training on it. And then the third point is that you generally have these little kind of blobs of light flowing around. Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes are probably doing their best to react and to do stuff properly, but it's not really in line with what they're seeing, and often they move weirdly, and it just comes across. I mean, the word that I have to describe it is unfortunately naff. It just comes across as being. It's probably a good idea on paper, but when they translated it into the into the room, and we're talking about an extremely dark room where nothing is happening, and it just doesn't really do anything for me.
Okay. So then, let's see here. What were the colors of the phaser shots?
What, I mean, orange?
Orange, I guess.
I think one was yellow and the other was red and blue, but... So here's the thing that I'm curious about. If this was on the holodeck, perhaps those phasers couldn't have hurt either one. What if Riker was trying to track his little ball and accidentally took off Picard's head? Do you think it's possible? Point blank shot from the phaser? Could he have called that an accident? Anyway, so there's only, but one thing I had, the only biggest thing I had, Picard was standing on yellow and Riker was standing on blue. There's only spots for two people. I mean, wouldn't they want a whole group of people to be able to do their work? Like a shooting range?
This is only phaser range 1A.
Oh, that
right?
Could be. Yes.
They probably have another 60 of them. But yeah. I mean, I think that your point is well taken. You would expect it to be, 50 side by side and a lot more, a lot closer together and stuff.
Right. Well, anyway, it's here that Picard tricks Riker into joining a Klingon vessel for an exchange program. So, actually, you know something that I thought of, though? He actually asked, he says he was thinking about asking for a volunteer when Riker, throws his hands up, me, pick me. Picard didn't even give a chance to take names of volunteers. So, if this is a first-come, first-served policy, it really wasn't fair, since only one person knew about the assignment. So, do you think anyone would have been better than Riker to go on this mission? Like, say, Worf?
No, I think Riker was the perfect person to go on that mission. I was actually thinking about that when I watched the episode yesterday. And he was the perfect choice. Riker is... I mean, I'm a Riker fan. I do like him. And I do like Jonathan Frakes as well. And I was just thinking... If anyone was going to go aboard a Klingon ship, and it couldn't be Worf, that wouldn't have been such an interesting episode. If there was any human on that ship, any of the main crew who was going to go on, it would definitely have to be Riker, wouldn't it? He's a big guy, he's bold, he's adventurous, he's always willing for a challenge. I think Riker is the perfect person to go on that mission.
Okay, so definitely not sending Wesley.
No, you're not. You shouldn't be sending Wesley. He wouldn't be able to take on the Klingon women. That's for sure. I do echo Mark's on this. By the way, I'm not that big a Riker fan, or at least I don't think I am. We'll see where the cookie crumbles as the years go by. But I think this is the first episode that Riker carries. Well, in my opinion, this is really when Riker. He carries half episodes here and there, like Arsenal of Freedom and stuff. But in my opinion, this is when he fully carries the show, and I think he does extremely well. The fact is that when you're moving over to the Klingon ship, you're going to want to send someone. You're not going to send the third engineer or anything like that. You have to send someone that's relatively senior enough. And out of everyone on the crew, I think Riker's he's the guy to go across.
Definitely.
And I think I think he fits in well, and it's a natural choice. And actually, I always read this as I think Picard kind of knew that, and that's what he was you know, that's why he went to Riker first. I don't think there was any intention of it going, you know, going to a third nurse or anything like that.
No, Picard knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that Riker would volunteer for this. He just knew it because he says, you know, I was thinking about asking for volunteers, and he knew that Riker was going to do that. And he was naturally the right choice as well. But I'd agree with you, James, that, you know, this is the first episode that Riker carries, and it's one of those episodes that I wouldn't say made me fall in love with Riker, but it made me look at him in a different way, and I just thought, actually, I really like this guy. He's cool.
Okay. Yeah, I have to agree. Riker was the best one.
Yeah.
So, but Worf schools Riker on his people. And I thought, you know, Worf sure knows a lot about Klingon culture, but obviously it must be through reading because he grew up with humans. We find out later, right? So yeah. Do you think maybe, or Doc, remind me, has Worf really established that he was raised by humans at this point?
Yes, even in the first season, it's mentioned. So in Heart of Glory, it's mentioned that, which is actually a surprise. I was surprised that they managed to hit that story so early. It's mentioned that he was raised by humans, and his parents were, you know, killed from a Romulan attack.
Yes, he grew up on Galt.
Galt. Okay. All right. So, but he does give Riker a little going away present. That comes later.
Oh, yes, the little USB stick. Yeah.
Yeah, the emergency transponder. I think that comes later in the episode. But so let's go back to Mendon, because he's on the prowl on the bridge, starting with the workstation to offer suggestions on how to improve response time. What do you think about everybody's, I want to say, demeanor to Mendon?
But I'm confused by this guy, by the way, just because... And maybe can we clear this up now? In our opinion, he's not he's Starfleet or not?
No, he's not.
That's, I would wonder about this episode: is he actually Starfleet? Because later on, okay, we'll get there, but we'll bring it up now. And he says, "Oh, it's a Benzite regulation. Any officer on one of our ships wouldn't report this until he'd had a full solution to the problem, whatever it is." And I was thinking, hang on a minute. You're in a Starfleet uniform, and you've come on this Starfleet exchange program. Aren't you trained in Starfleet protocol? And he was saying, it's a Benzite regulation, but you're part of Starfleet. So that whole thing about this episode, that's one of the things that confuses me. And I'm just thinking, hang on a minute. Are you in the Benzite version of Starfleet, or are you in Federation Starfleet? What's going on there? So it confuses me.
Yeah, I think the only way that it could work is that if he's not in Starfleet and he's just been brought across, and whilst he came across, he put on a new uniform, and, you know, and the uniform thing is a bit of a pain. If he had been in a different uniform, I think it would have been a lot clearer. But there are too many things that start making you think, well, if you're in Starfleet, then you must have gone to the academy and you must know at least something about all of these things he's tripping up over. So, and then also the issue about, you know, Mordok, you couldn't have graduated the academy so fast. You know, that kind of contradicts some of the stuff in Coming of Age, where Mordok was the first to the academy. So I kind of read this that this guy must be, he isn't in Starfleet, he's not been to the academy. But even when, you know, when you take that on board, I don't particularly like this kind of B plot that much. I think that it's kind of like a bit laid on too thick, and you know, he wanders around too much and he stalks to too many people, and they always have this, you know, very much a standoffish kind of way of dealing with him. And I don't know. It doesn't do a huge amount for me, and I think that sometimes the main characters aren't being too. They're not being too nice to a guy that's trying to, you know, he's trying to make suggestions. And so I don't know.
Right. Mark, I have to bring up a point. You said you're now in a Starfleet uniform. You're on a Starfleet ship. Wouldn't you know Starfleet procedures and protocols? And I was thinking, yes, maybe, but Riker certainly didn't know anything about bumping off his captain if he was too feeble to do his job anymore. You know, doesn't that kind of mess with your chain of command type of thing? So I think Riker has just about as much knowledge of Klingon procedures as Mendon should have of Federation procedures. It'd be very hard to overwrite years and years of programming just because you're on another ship.
I guess so. I just assumed when Mendon comes on board that he is a member of Starfleet because he beamed on with the other crew members. So I was assuming he was part of Starfleet and not. Had he come on in a Benzite uniform, then it would have been a lot easier to stomach that whole storyline.
Right.
Yeah, it would have been a lot easier to find.
Go ahead.
I've got it because it's mentioned that these guys are eager to please. Yes. He merely got into a uniform before getting on the ship. I think that's
okay.
It.
I don't think so because they would have told him get out of that uniform now. Yeah. But that's another thing. Then, if that's the case, and if they told him you're now going to be on a Federation starship, you need to be wearing a Federation uniform. Why didn't the Klingons just rip those clothes off of Riker and throw some Klingon garb on? So why did Riker keep his uniform? No, I'm just saying that, you know, they do treat him with a fair amount of disrespect. And I think it's because he came off as completely know-it-all. He's a complete know-it-all. You know, that's great. That is wonderful. But you know, I think you could do it better. Oof. I'd have a problem with that. Yeah. This is my display. I'll do it the way I want it. Thanks.
That really is first-class design. Absolutely marvelous. Yes.
Yes, yeah. And that one guy is just giving him a look like, go away. You know?
Yeah. I mean, by the way, spending a vast majority of my time in front of a computer screen every week, when he went over to Wesley and started saying, oh, this is really excellent and stuff, and I was actually just thinking, but what has Wesley done? Has he just hidden the thing, or has he arranged these icons in a slightly different pattern? I never get the impression there's a huge amount of customizability on the helm at all. So, I don't know. There's certainly a limit, right, to what Wesley's done to the display of this console. So,
I wondered that as well. Like, exactly. Well, what really is first rate about, you know, he said that really is first rate, the design. I'm just thinking, how does that work then? I was wondering, because I spend a lot of my time in front of a computer screen as well. And I was just wondering, how is that GUI, how is that designed? How is that laid out? So, yeah, computer geek in me is just curious about how wonderfully that Wesley's customized the Alcar's interface there.
I equated that to the way Wesley had the icons on his Windows wallpaper based on the picture that was there. You know, it's like when I change the icon, the picture, background picture, I have to change the alignment of the icon so it doesn't cover up a picture or a face or something like that. So maybe that's the superb way of handling it. Okay. All right. So what do you think's coming out of that apparatus that Mendon's wearing? For all we know, that could be some kind of narcotic that is banned by the Federation or...
Yeah.
You know.
It's crack cocaine.
I'm assuming it's an inert form of gas which the Benzites need for respiration, but it's probably fairly innocuous to most other humanoid species. It's something in their atmosphere which they need in order to survive, but it's probably fairly neutral to most other species, I would guess.
Well, let's hope so.
Unless he's doing meth, I don't know.
Let's not find out in 6 years that something they breathed in 6 years ago is actually going to destroy or kill most of the Enterprise crew, especially the bridge officers, and then they track it back to Mendon's respirator.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's an interesting part. He asks Wesley if the captain is open to suggestions. And instead of Wesley telling Mendon, well, yes, but you should run it up the chain of command, he actually tells him that he's never known Picard not to listen to one of his officers. And so what happens later? Captain Picard basically barks at Mendon about using the chain of command. So I have a second here. Who is really at fault here? Mendon or Wesley? I mean, Mendon had only talked to Picard because Wesley encouraged him to.
But even if you think that it is Mendon, So even if you do think it is Wesley for sending him the wrong way, you shouldn't really listen to Wesley. I mean, he's only an acting ensign.
Yeah.
You know, so Mendon takes responsibility there, I think.
Okay.
Although I thought that for a trained diplomat, I thought Picard's response that, we should have explained it to you better was a bit condescending.
I thought his whole demeanor was bad.
Yeah.
The way he kept looking at him like, you know, you're going to pay for this later. I hope you know that. And yeah. Sure enough, with Worf, he sure pays for it later. But
yes, does. You may impress me, yeah. Ensign Mendon.
Oh, yeah. God. That was terrible. You know, yeah. We have a chain of command. You will report your ideas to Lieutenant Worf, who, yeah, right, he'll eat them. The ideas end Mendon. Okay. Pepius Claw, Heart of Targ, and Gah. But isn't a Targ their pet?
Yes, I mean, I think, are they pets or were they? I think they're probably more akin to hunting animals, aren't they? Like we would use a dog for hunting. I'm guessing that's what a Klingon would use a Targ for. But yeah, Heart of Targ. I wonder what a Pipius is. But obviously they have very tasty claws.
And?
I don't eat my dog. Live or dead. I don't want to eat my dog.
I mean, some people have pigs as pets, right? And people eat bacon. It's
That's true. No, I can't pet an animal one day on Monday and then eat it by Friday. That I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I couldn't do that. Plus, his gach wasn't alive, as it was well pointed out later on, that it's, you know, freshest while it's live. So I think, you know, if Worf was... And that's another thing I was wondering. Why wasn't Worf actually in 10 Ford when all that food was being served? They could have had fun. Some blood wine and, you know, like a big old party.
No, absolutely. I mean, I have to say that a lot of this food that's being brought out in 10 Forward is, I mean, it's pretty ornate stuff and pretty well thrown together. It's only like a 2-minute scene or so. They didn't necessarily even need to have it, right?
It's quite elaborate, isn't it?
Yes, but then I also mentioned, why wasn't Worf there? I mean, because if Worf would have been there, it would have been a whole lot better.
Yeah, that's true. He could have been tucking into all of that food. And one of the things I read about this episode, they wanted to go and find some alien-looking food, so they went out to a local Asian market and found all of these. Because, you know, you see things with little squid and octopus tentacles hanging out, and they went out to a local Asian market and found some unusual-looking food, shall we say.
So I think Worf should have been there, and they could have had a barrel of blood wine at the time they were doing it.
Mm.
But it'd have been funny. Then Picard makes his comment about the feast before the transfer.
Yeah, I think that's quite a nice tradition, isn't it? The feast before the transfer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's quite a nice little tradition.
So
can I bring up a very, very, very minor nitpick, which I wasn't going to mention, but then, Lou, you mentioned the blood wine.
Oh boy, here we go. If it's I wonder if it's the same thing. I have a continuity error. Go on.
No. It's not a continuity error. Oh, I get tired with a lot of things in Klingon culture being blood, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Blood pie, blood wine. Just leave off the blood X. You know, you don't need it. Calling blood wine is good enough. It really is.
It makes sense because they're not going to be drinking blood. I don't know, maybe so. But the continuity error. When Riker hands Picard the Klingon drink, Picard grabs it with his right hand and begins to sit down. But the next shot to Picard, as he's sitting down, the drink is now in his left hand. But, oops!
Oh.
It's a minor thing. But
I didn't notice that.
There's another thing. I don't know what it was. It was sticking out of the drink. But the next cut to Riker, or whatever it is, Riker actually doesn't have that in his drink, so he must have already eaten that. That there's not a continuity error, I suppose, but yeah. Right hand to left hand. Bad Patrick, bad Patrick.
Well spotted.
Okay. Okay, so a Klingon vessel approaches. It's the Paw. The Paw. Is that PAW, Paw? Cat's paw, dog's paw? No.
PAGH.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Whatever it is. But anyway, it has a parasite on it, which gets noticed by Mendon, who tells no one of his findings. Later on that. So, O'Brien is in the transporter room and is seeing Riker off. And did you get the impression that he was trying to scare Riker from doing it? Or, you know, good for you, because I ain't going. I wouldn't do it. No way.
I didn't necessarily think he was trying to scare him, but I thought he was just, lightly ribbing him.
Mm. Okay. Well, either way, now we can begin the B story plot.
So, I mean, well, are people fans of the B plot?
It works okay enough. I mean, the whole Ensign Mendon thing and the little subspace bacteria or whatever it is on the ship. I mean, it works okay enough.
I know they're trying to, certainly to kind of mirror what's going on the Bird of Prey, right? Where, they've sent over an officer who's a bit out of, fish out of water, and they have someone also that's come aboard, and they're also, not particularly getting on well. Though I think you might leave with the impression after this episode that, Riker goes aboard a ship and tells them that this is the way to do things, and then someone comes onto our ship and we learn nothing from him, and we hassle him about protocol. So there's a slight... holier than thou attitude of the main crew.
Yeah,
a little bit seeping through.
But Mendon didn't come on and put Wesley through a computer console and get his...
Oh, if only.
If only. Yeah.
And if only he had got confused between Klingons and Starfleet, he would have turned up and he would have been, plotting to assassinate Worf because... that he's his boss and he's trying to go up the chain of go up the career progression ladder.
Well, I don't think he could after not very hospitable, are they?
No.
Oops, I shouldn't have said that in front of you. Yeah. Okay, so Riker's being escorted by a gawker who just can't stop staring at him because the poor devil's never seen a human before. Riker reports to Captain Cargon to settle in as the Pah's new first officer. But first, he has to kick some Klingon ass. The second officer, Lieutenant Clagg. Do you think Lieutenant Clagg had to give up his first officer rank for Riker like Riker does for Kern from the Klingon Imperial Empire? Which is another thing. Why are we getting Imperial Empire? That makes no sense. But anyway, about Clagg, what do you think?
I guess he would have to step aside. I'm assuming that's what happened. He was the... Because he said he is your second officer, so I'm assuming they already had a first officer on board of that ship, so maybe he got demoted temporarily, which is maybe why he's a little bit hostile towards Riker in the beginning, I guess.
That's true, because it seems like Riker didn't... When Kern came on board, Riker didn't just become second officer. It was almost like he was on leave of absence. Why Kern took his spot, because he was still on the ship. Can I offer a suggestion? A suggestion? Can't wait to get to that. Anyway, Lieutenant Clagg does not believe Riker. So, well, here's an interesting question, guys. Clagg whines to Cargon about how he does not believe Riker. And Cargon says, say it in their language. Why would they have to have done all that? Isn't Riker's communicator translating for him? Or do all Klingons have to learn English?
Yeah, it's one of those things with a universal translator, isn't it? It works when the plot requires it.
Yes, but it does allow some of the language to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah. This episode makes you believe that everyone is talking English, and I just think that that's at odds with almost anything else that you see. So I think it should be universal translator. They shouldn't have that line.
Okay. Right. Okay. So anyway,
I have to mention a couple of things though about the. I mean, we've mentioned this before on. I don't think it was on the Battlebridge. I think it was on the Loot Trek show, which is that why are Klingon ships so dirty? There's always a lot of dust. I mean, you wouldn't want to put a pad down. It would be lost under dust within a couple of hours. And then when Riker gets kind of challenged by the second officer, and he questions his orders, Riker wins, but he only wins because he gets a cheap shot in.
Yes,
he kind of gets a cheap shot in straight away, and I'm thinking, that's not particularly honourable, is it? Mm-hmm. You would have expected him to go into have a ceremonial start to the match, start to the fight, rather than someone just punching him while the guy's not expecting it, and then to be thrown through the computer console. Actually, to be honest, despite the fact that the Klingon had his head through the computer console and was on the floor, it seemed like Riker was in just as bad a state as he was by the end of the fight, and huffing and puffing all over the place. So
yeah.
I think the Klingon actually gave up early. I think the Klingon could sort of take in Riker.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely. He was huge.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. He had to do the cheap shot. The only way he could possibly have won. And watching him huff and puff, if I was a third officer, I'd be jumping up right now saying, hey, my turn. Because, third officer, bypass a second officer, and boom, you're first officer. Isn't that the way to do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Captain Kargon, are all Klingon leaders overweight?
Yeah. We haven't even got to Sins of the Father yet.
No, we haven't, but that's what I'm saying. We're going to find in this series a lot of Klingon leaders, except for Gowron, are severely overweight. I don't know how they ever got that way. You got to figure, to rise to power, you have to kill other people who are in that position. How did Kargon, or... I guess Kinpach was, he was huge. So
big fat guy.
But I don't think, I think Kinpach was more of a emissary, obviously, type of politician type of person, not a warrior.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe when they get old, they start eating their enemies, and that's why they get so fat.
So they scare their competition.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, the Klingon leaders do tend to be somewhat portly, I shall say.
Okay, all right.
I mean, to an extent, it reminds me a lot like I know it's not a quite direct comparison, but you have people like the Kings of England, and you have large guys as Kings of England, and they are technically supposed to be in charge of the country and warriors, and they would have got to that position in that realm. So people like Henry VIII would have been a huge guy. And so, and also there's also almost a Shakespearean aspect to it as well, right? Where you have the the old big fat leader and larger than life in a way. I don't know. If you believed everything about the Klingons being honorable and soldiers, you'd expect really the leaders to be 22 or so. And then anyone older than that would be killed by, younger, cleverer guys coming up through the ranks. But you don't really see that.
Right. They even say that.
I can see Kargon as a sort of, like you said, like Henry VIII, he was a very slim and very handsome man in his younger years. But by the time he gets old, he's big and fat. And maybe Kargon is the Henry VIII of the Klingon Empire.
Yeah, because they even say there are. Look around you; there are no old Klingons.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we've already talked about. Well, we didn't talk about the substance that was found on the Enterprise, but we did discuss why Mendon didn't report it, and how everyone. Some people barked at him for it. Some people just stared at him for it. But do you really think that what he did was wrong because he didn't report it? Because he's just following Benzat regulation. I don't know how they can beat every single regulation and every change in protocol. They have to rewrite years and years of programming to make him conform to the Federation way. So I think maybe the Enterprise was lax by not putting him in a position that would be so important. He should have been more of an observer, not an actual employee.
Lou, I think that's absolutely true, as long as you accept that this guy isn't in the Federation.
Yeah,
and then the only thing then is that why is it not made clear that he's not in the Federation? But I kind of agree with you. And I think that the episode really works. It only really works if you assume he's not in the Federation, and that's why he's making these mistakes.
Right, and he's not. He's clearly a Benzide officer who just happens to be on a different bridge for the day.
Yeah. And one thing I did notice at this point is that, my goodness, Riker's chair can swivel around far.
When Data sits in, I noticed that as well. It's like, wow, that chair goes through a full 180 degrees. That's amazing.
It does. It really does. I think that could spin around as long as you had your legs up, you could probably spin it.
Yeah, a full 360 degrees, yeah.
That's for those days that he's on the bridge alone with Troy. Which, by the way, where was she at today?
No Troy. And also, no Geordi either, I don't think.
No Geordi. And, very little Dr. Pulaski as well. So she was in the scene in Tenforward very briefly, but, yeah.
Yeah, just to make comments on the food that was being presented. So, speaking of which, it's now time, it's chow time on the paw. And Riker gets hit on by the Klingon woman. Oh, ugly. But they do offer to have her breastfeed him. What do you think, guys? Sick of that? If the food is not good for you, we can have them women breastfeed you.
I love this scene. I think this is really, really funny. And I just think, up until this point, and it's a true point when Riker says, you know, when they say to him, you have a sense of humor, and he says that back to them, yeah, you know, I've never seen a Klingon laugh before. I just think that's really funny. Yes, if Klingon food is too strong for you, maybe we can get one of the females to breastfeed you. And they all just erupt into this huge raucous laughter. And that's one of the things that, you know, that is typical of the Klingons. They have this real lust for life. And that's one of the things that you don't see in Worf, because he's so very stern and so very serious. And obviously we find out in DS9 why that is. But I really, really like that scene. I just think that's really funny. And they all just erupt into this huge amount of laughter. And then the woman says, I may be back for you. And, you know, they are curious about how you would endure. And I just love the bit where, like, it says, one or both. And they all just erupt into laughter again. I think I love that scene. I think it's really, really funny.
Oh, yeah. Great. Like when the one Klingon woman licks her teeth. Please, no. I would have been neither. Thank you.
Yeah. And then he just, Riker just takes the drink. He says, is she serious? Yes. So he just takes that big drink, and you just see the look on his face. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. They're being serious.
Look behind my shoulder once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, I have to completely agree here. I think this is the best scene of the entire episode.
Yeah.
I also think that the breastfeeding line is the best line of the entire episode. I
love
it.
I love that.
And in fact, I tried to bring it into conversation in normal day life as well.
Ah.
The one thing I do like, and again, I'm surprised about how much TNG gets right early on, because fundamentally, I think this is what the Klingons are like, right? Throughout the TNG run, these are Klingons. These are the guys that you still have the same sense it's the same culture being written here as it's been written in the seventh season of DS9.
Yeah,
you've got these big loud laughing Klingons, and I'm surprised that we, in the previous episode, the Klingon episode with Heart of Glory, there's mention of honor, but it's, there's no communal, well, there's not as much a communal atmosphere. But with this, the way the Klingons behave could have been, if you have this scene anywhere else for the next 15 years in Trek, it still works, and it still shows that the decisions made at this stage were really the correct decisions and the correct way to take the Klingons as we it headed into the TNG universe.
Okay. In six episodes, I'm going to be calling back to this episode, okay? And this is the reason why. The Klingon adds that he refuses to see his father because he was captured by a Romulan and not allowed to die.
Yeah.
So he's going to die.
That is the episode you're going to be calling forward to.
Oh, yeah. So he's going to die alone and without honor. And I thought, you know, Riker says several times, he's your father, you know, but yeah. I don't want to see him. Like, but he's your father. It doesn't, he's your father. And in six episodes, I'm going to be yelling at my TV saying, but he's your father. Mm. But here's another thing. He said that his father is going to, you know, he was captured by the Romulan, not allowed to die, and is going to die in disgrace. Now, doesn't that mean he also is should be dishonored? And how many generations down the line? We find out later. It's so many generations. That,
it's something like six or seven, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, technically, I guess he should have been disgraced too.
I mean, is that for all dishonor? Or I thought that was just for when you... I thought the issue with the, you know, four generations or whatever it was when you were like a traitor. I thought that was the... When Worf had to take the dishonor of his dad selling out to the Romulans, that was the thing that got passed down.
Right, and that's another
rather
thing.
Than we're not gonna, just an honorable death.
Yeah, that's what we're going to also talk about, is the difference. We'll get into the difference between a dishonor and a discommodation, because obviously Worf was supposed to die for the Empire to make up for his father's dishonor, but yet instead they decided to discommodate him. Well, I thought that was just a plot line just to keep Worf on the show instead of being killed off. But, yeah, I mean, I just wondered, whatever his father not being allowed to die, is that dishonorable to him as well? But now we get into one of the final bits of the show where do you think the Klingons are really this distrusting? Riker swore an oath to the Klingons, but when they find a hole in their ship and know the Enterprise did an intensive scan, obviously the Federation must be attempting to restart this bitter war they just got out of. Really, are they really that stupid?
Yeah, the Klingons do seem overly paranoid here, don't they? It's just like, you know, they had an intense scanning beam at this point. You know, what are you trying to do? You're trying to blow up our ship. It's like, oh, hang on a minute. As Riker says, we're allies. Why would we do that? They just seem very, very militant and paranoid at this point. Yeah, a little bit odd. A little bit odd.
No, I mean, I agree. I think that the Klingon captain in particular is he is acting irrationally and too irrationally. And by the way, I can kind of see what they need. They actually need a climax to the episode, right? They need to get something out. They need people to meet and there to be kind of like a sense of threat. And okay, they did it this way. I don't think it was perfect, but I wouldn't want them to introduce like an extra strand that then means you don't get to see as much of the time on the Klingon ship and stuff. So I kind of took this as, you know, the kind of the lesser of two evils, as you take this on the chin as a way of accepting that it's a relatively weak way of having a confrontation. But all the good stuff you get instead is all of the Klingon culture and the Klingon Riker interaction. So I'm kind of going to give it a pass.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with it too. I let it slip.
Okay, so then do you buy in what Kargon was doing when he tried to interrogate Riker about the Enterprise's weaknesses? You know, you swore an oath to me, therefore you must give me this information. No, I swore an oath to you, but I also swore an oath to them, and they are in conflict. And so basically, do you buy where Kargon was going to kill him had he actually given that information? And if so, do you think Kargon would have used that information anyway and been happy for it?
I sort of get where he's coming from, where he says, I would have killed you had you given up the information, because that would show that Riker was dishonorable and disloyal. So I get where he's coming from. Would he have used that information? Probably. I guess a Klingon would use whatever... Yeah, I think he would have done. I think he would have used whatever information had been presented to him. But I do get the whole, had you said that, I would have killed you where you stood for being dishonourable. That fits with the Klingon culture, I think.
Okay, Doc, anything to add?
I completely agree. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Good.
He would have killed him, but he would have had no problem using the information.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the Enterprise, where we can let poor Mr. Mendon dig himself out of his hole, because he actually finds a solution for both ships, but now the Klingon ship won't answer and is ready to attack the Enterprise. But first, Riker pulls out his little homing beacon and turns it on. So what do you think about the idea of Kargon? What is that? Let me see it. Or do you think he would have just killed him, thinking that was some kind of weapon?
Well, he even mentions it. You know, he even mentions, well, what is that thing that you're slowly getting out of your boot that looks suspicious?
Yeah. Is it a weapon?
It's not a weapon, yeah. but please hold it for the next 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I do have the point here that Klingons are really stupid.
Yeah, he's a little bit slow, isn't he?
Because he's still holding on to it the whole time. I'm thinking I would have thrown it down, busted it. But anyway, so Kargon takes it, and the Enterprise locks onto the transponder and beams the Klingon captain aboard. So what do you think about this putting Riker in command? Because isn't the second officer the one who jumps up like, this ain't right? I don't think really it was honorable for Riker just to have him beamed out of there.
No, it's not the Klingon way, is it?
Uh-uh. So I think I think he just destroyed that captain's honor by not killing him, but actually having him just removed from the attack. That had to be terrible.
Yeah, I'm guessing the captain could justify that because Riker wasn't Klingon. He was a human, so he wouldn't be dishonored by a human because they're not a Klingon, I guess.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
He would get away with it, yeah.
But Riker's now in command, and he orders the Enterprise to lower their shields and surrender. And sure enough, what does Picard do? For about the fourth time in the series, he surrenders.
I mean, was it necessary for him to surrender?
It was a joke.
Maybe,
no.
It was a joke.
Maybe Riker's, you know, had power go to his head. Maybe he's just completely turned. But.
Oh, no. I think it was just all smartassery that was coming on between Riker and Picard. Picard.
It's a nice little in-joke between the two of them, isn't it? A nice little bit of fun.
Yeah, surrender. Okay, we will.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing, just final thing to pick up on the Klingon ship as Riker takes over is that you can see that there was a relationship developing between Riker and the second officer, right? So when in the end Riker steps up, to me it seems reasonable that the guy under Riker didn't try to usurp Riker. I thought that at that point there was enough trust there. There had actually been developed. And that kind of, as long as your second is with you, right, then the second has to then worry about his, the guy under him. Right. So it's not, to me, it seemed quite reasonable that Riker would be able to pull this off and it would be, he would take charge of the ship.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Kargon is now on the bridge of the Enterprise and tries to grab for his weapon and fire on Picard. And, obviously two things happen at the same time. Worf stuns Kargon while Data moves in to protect Picard. So I think that was pretty awesome. Also, most people would have ducked, but Data is actually willing to be killed for his captain. Nice. So which would you guys have done? Jumped in front of Picard or ducked?
I'm a kind of duck kind of guy. Personally, myself.
He also probably also had to get out of the way of Worf. Mark, what about you? Are you a duck or die?
It depends how much I'm being paid. I never actually noticed that. That's a good point. I remember Kargon going for his weapon, and you can see Worf. I was just keeping my eye on Worf because you can see that he's reaching straight for his weapon because he knows what Kargon's going to do. I didn't actually notice Data do that. So that's interesting. Would I jump in front of my captain? If I was a dutiful Starfleet officer, then yes, I would.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, so the ships are all fixed. Everybody's back aboard their own vessel. Repairs are complete. Oh, I did forget to mention, when Kargon returns to his ship, he orders Riker back to his post, but Riker decides to just stand there, and what's he get for it? Bam! Blast across the face.
Smack in the mouth.
No, what I'm thinking, because Kargon beat the crap out of him and then told him to leave my ship, what if Riker had actually returned to his post like he was told to, would he have been killed? I didn't get the point there.
I guess it's just that I think Riker's picked up the whole Klingon thing. He's obviously been confronted by the captain. He's obviously he's done wrong. So I'm thinking that Riker's in that sort of situation, he is in the wrong in terms of, you know, from what the captain, you know, from the captain's perspective. So the right thing to do is just to stand there and take your punishment, because he just looks at him and just sort of, yeah, he sort of has that little intake of breath and just prepares to be smacked in the face. I'm just thinking that's Riker just honing in on the Klingon culture there.
Okay. All right, Doc. Anything?
I mean, no, nothing huge to add on that, other than I think that, the captain coming back onto the ship, I think that there's probably some kind of, you know, formality that he has to follow, and he can't just, you know, if he's not prepared to kick him off, then the first officer fundamentally has to stay and be receiving the orders. And then at that point, I think Riker kind of forces his hand, which kind of, you know, allows the captain to unwind the arrangement and for everyone to go on their merry way.
That's got to be it. I think you hit the nail square on the head. Riker is actually now the captain, so the Cargon actually has to take him out of the equation to get his captaincy back. Perfect. Makes perfect sense. Okay. All right. Well, any other thing that you guys want to add before we head off to our final thoughts?
We don't see what happens to Mendon, right? He appears, he disappears, and then he moves on. He does vaguely mention that the parasite is breaking down the nuclear bonds within some alloy. It's not. It wouldn't be.
Oh, here we go. The scientific inaccuracy of the week. Okay. Come on, tell us more.
Well, no, it's just not breaking down the nuclear bonds. That's all. It can break down bonds, but it's not nuclear bonds.
Oh, God.
Otherwise, there'll be a big like boom. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. The ship would have just turned into soup.
Yeah.
Spread across the galaxy. Okay, gotcha. It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I'm going to start out with saying, you know, it's a very interesting look at the Klingons, and like Riker tells Worf, he comes from a very brave and unique people, and it's glad Worf is with them. Do you guys agree with the brave and unique people?
Yes, I do.
No, on paper, at least.
On paper, at least. That's true. As we go along, I don't know about unique, but or brave.
They're certainly unique.
Definitely unique. So anyway, after a welcome home, it's off to sickbay. I don't really know much to say about this episode for a final rating. It's a pretty interesting look at the first look at the inside of a Klingon ship and how it runs. Makes a Klingon seem pretty honorable, but as I said, future episodes will make the Klingon seem like thugs and hoods who use dishonor at every opportunity to obtain honor. Ironic. Riker on a Klingon ship. I can't imagine anyone else, even Worf, who would have been better suited for the assignment. So even though I led you down that path asking, don't you think somebody would have been better, such as Worf, I have to agree. Riker would have been better. So overall, it seems a pretty run-of-the-mill episode, even for the first dealings of the Klingons. So I'm going to give this one a 3.5 out of 5. Hmm. Mark, how about you as our guest? What do you think?
Okay. Well, I specifically asked to come on for this episode because I really, really like it. I think this is... we spoke earlier about... before we recorded, and we'd said, you know, maybe Season 3 is where TNG really picks up. But when you actually look at Season 2, there are a lot of really, really good episodes in Season 2. And I think this is one of them. I think this is... It's a really good Riker episode. It really is a good introduction to the Klingons. And I will agree with you, Lou, that later on, some of the Klingons are revealed to be a little bit devious and a little bit underhand. But I think this episode shows the Klingons as they really are, an honourable people. And I think some of those interactions on the Klingon ship are brilliant. I love that whole the breastfeeding scene and the thing with the women. I just think that's really, really funny. And there was no one better to go onto the Klingon ship than Micah. The B plot. Yeah, okay. We've got Wesley being a racist and talking about Mendon. All you Benzites look the same. The B plot's a little bit. Yeah, okay. But overall, I think this is a really, really good episode, and I really enjoy it. I'm going to give this a 4.5.
4.5. All right, that's what I gave a natural selection. So great, 4.5. Yeah. Okay, Doctor.
Hey, so actually, I'm kind of going to echo a lot of the stuff that Mark has said. I think this is the first. I think this is the first good episode that we have with Riker leading it. I think this is a very good introduction or kind of reintroduction of the Klingon culture. And as I mentioned, I think the guys, you know, where we've landed is where we are pretty much going to remain into the end of the season. I mean, not so end of the season, end of the series, and then well into Deep Space Nine. Now, I take on board that there are obviously dishonorable Klingons out there, and a lot of you, a lot of them, certainly the political type, will distort the honor as a way of, you know, of seeking power and seeking glory. But I actually think that that's almost a realistic kind of consequence of a culture that's built on this honor.
Right.
I actually quite like the idea of how the Klingons handle their chain of command, where, you know, you have to, it's your duty to assassinate your boss, and anyone that works for you has a duty to assassinate you. And if we can only get that into modern day life, I think perhaps a lot of people out there will be a bit happier.
Oh, man.
I mean, far too many incompetent middle managers out there, in my opinion.
As I've mentioned, I'm
not a huge fan of the of how quickly they have to wrap up the episode and how stupid they have to make the Klingon captain. Yeah. But I'm happy to take this just for the view that we have of Klingon culture, and in particular, I mean, even the, you know, the food is great that they have, the interactions, the laughing Klingons, the breastfeeding jokes, all great stuff. So I come out of this really, you know, I think this is a great episode. I'm coming in at I don't do half points. It's a 4 out of 5 for me. I mean, perhaps it could have been a little bit better with some of the other bits and pieces just ironed out. But I think this is a, you know, very good episode, certainly for where we are in the series run.
Okay, 4 for the Doctor. All right, Mark, why don't you remind everybody where you could be found again?
Okay, so you can find me on the Twitters. I am at Mark Stamper on the Twitters, so that's MarkStamper on the Twitters, or you can follow me on To Beam Up, which is my Star Trek original series episode review podcast, which is coming back very soon. We're going to record another episode in the next couple of days, so there should be something there very, very soon.
Good.
Actually, Mark, I nearly tried to pull you up on this before, but let me do it now. Can I put a bet on? I don't think Kirsty will enjoy The City on the Edge of Forever.
Mm.
Or at least I believe that she's going to come in below the level that most people have that episode at.
Why?
If that makes sense.
We have watched that. We've watched it twice because we watched it before. We've watched it twice. And she likes it, but she probably doesn't come in as high as most people would think.
Yeah, that's what in fact, I'm of the opinion that... Okay,
it does slow down in the middle. There is a little bit of a lull. I really like it. I think it's a good episode. But you're right. She didn't come in. People were maybe thinking, oh, she's going to give it a 10. She's going to give it a 10, like she did with last. What was it? This Side of Paradise, which she loved. She doesn't come in at a 10. I can just say that we haven't recorded it yet, but I know her score. It's not a 10.
Let me ask you, I don't think The City on the Edge of Forever is the best Star Trek episode.
I don't think it is. I don't either.
Not the best Star Trek original series episode of season one.
No.
Or even at the back end of season one. There are other episodes around. It's a very, very good episode, but I think it's slightly overrated.
Yeah, I think it's good. I do like it. and it's got a really interesting premise to it. I do like the premise. But no, there were better episodes in season one. I mean, Arena, I love that episode. Devil in the Dark, that's great.
Devil in the Dark is better.
Arena is better. You know, this A Taste of Armageddon. Balance of Terror, A Taste of Armageddon is better. But it's a good episode. I think people were probably thinking that Kirsty would think it was amazing because it's got a little bit of everything, you know, a little bit of love, a little bit of action, a little bit. But she was like, it was pretty good, but I've seen better. So interesting. Yeah, you've called that perfectly.
Oh, okay. Well, you better get out your episode before this lands, otherwise there'll be spoilers.
Spoilers, yes. Yeah, we better get recording tomorrow. If we get recording tomorrow, it'll be out on Wednesday because this will drop on Friday, won't it? So, or Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, November. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, Matter of Honor. Friday 15th. The 14th.
Okay. Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay. Like what you did there, Doc. Back him up to a wall and force him to do one.
Yeah.
All right.
You better get recording tomorrow.
There you go. You heard it. Doc Roberts did that for you guys. Remember that.
I will.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on. All right.
It was my pleasure. It was good fun. Good fun talking to you.
Great.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
It's unjustified. It's unfair. He has rights.
A Starfleet experiment threatens to dismantle data for android research.
And what's at stake?
My very life.
Now, Captain Picard is Data's last hope for survival.
What is he? A machine.
And now a man will shut it off.
Objection.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Well, join us next week as we review episode 9 of season 2 of TNG, and that's called The Measure of a Man. And we will have Data Logan on, so check us out next week. Take care and good night.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Love you, Paul.
Who did that? Who said I love you, Paul?
I did.
Good. Then I'm going to put that on now. I want to see if Paul happens to see it or listen.
He'll pick that up.
Yeah. Well, it makes you wonder if everybody listens to the very bitter end.
I'm sure they do. Cool. Well then, guys, okay. Well, have a good time recording.